Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. We welcome you again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720. Hello to all. This is Milton Rosenberg.
We'll talk about that tonight on Extension 720.
Justin Kaufman here for Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. Good evening. Beautiful night here in Chicago, high atop the mouth of the Chicago River. As we broadcast to 30-plus states tonight with you till 10 o'clock, just before the heat wave takes hold here in the Chicago area. Temperatures are expected to grow and climb in the next couple hours, and will be somewhat of an uncomfortable evening. But the heat advisory, the extreme heat advisory, is not in effect until tomorrow. We'll pay attention to that tonight. Of course, try to keep our mind off the heat. What do you think of that? I like that idea. So tonight, let's celebrate the side hustle. That's a theme. That's a loose theme of tonight's program. Just about some people who have made their names by doing it themselves and picking up side business, if you will. The first guest, as we talked to Ro Khan about, Mark Maron. Mark Maron is a longtime stand-up comedian who, after a certain time of trying to break into the business, decided that, you know what, he wasn't going to wait around anymore. And he started a side hustle, which was a podcast. WTF with Mark Maron has turned into the king of all kings when it comes to podcasts. And, of course, it has opened the door to Hollywood, where Mark has not only been should win the award for his role as Sam in the show Glow on Netflix, which has season 3 coming up in August, but he's also starring in the new film Sword of Trust, a comedy set in the South about a pawn shop owner who has to sell Confederate Civil War paraphernalia. That's the setup. And then craziness ensues. So Mark Maron coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll have a long conversation with him about his career. Also, coming up, Johnny Jones is going to be in studio, the hip-hop artist from the South Side of Chicago on Closed Sessions. Has had a tremendous career. You know, a career that started, he was a poet in Chicago who didn't really have any aspirations to become a rapper, a hip-hop star in any form. Once, you know, you don't really hear it that way. Usually it's the other way around, where people have these, you know, they aspire to greatness or aspire to be musicians. But it started with the spoken word with Johnny Jones, and we'll talk with him about his side hustle, which has been music. He's worked in all sorts of different industries, trying to make it, all the while trying to produce his own music. So Johnny Jones will be in our performance studio tonight. We'll hear some music coming up and an interview later in the show as well. We continue our Chicago neighborhood tour tonight. Talk about a side hustle neighborhood. How about McKinley Park? McKinley Park, if you look to the history of McKinley Park, it was settled by the Irish immigrants coming to town, pretty much squatted on the land. And after the fire, all the industry that was displaced from the fire downtown in 1871 moved out towards 35th Street and Archer and took over McKinley Park. It is it's a self-starter neighborhood that continues to be a self-starter neighbor. But I will say, one that has one foot in the past and one in the future, we'll talk to Dana Calderon, who is a longtime friend of mine. I've known her for 25 years, about living and working in McKinley Park. So that's coming up as well, coming here in the 7:30 hour. And we'll talk to Sherry Williams, who her side hustle became her full-time gig. Bon Bon V is a t-shirt company, and it was not until the likes of Thandi Newton and Issa Rae started wearing her t-shirts and Instagram and other places that her business took off. So we'll talk about what it takes to sustain that business and a little help she got along the way. So those stories coming up tonight on Extension 720. We got a big show, so we're going to get right to it. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Johnny Jones live in studio, so stay with us. It's Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Like I said, this program tonight loosely themed around the idea of a side hustle. Mark Maron coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. Dana Calderon is going to take us to McKinley Park coming up after the 7:30 news. And I also mentioned Southside hip-hop artist Johnny Jones. Johnny Jones is in studio tonight. We'll talk with him coming up a little bit later in the program, but he's in our performance studio. His new album is called Dragonfly, and here is the track Dutch Masters. Take it away.
Look, women and blunts, we the money. Apparently I can save myself without the need of honey. The judge feeds my character, I'm light years ahead of him. Snakes in your boot, but your diamonds embezzle them. Just jazz for your retina, you feeling like Helen or Kellen. I wonder what you put in effort for. I'm just a moving apparatus, showing face, moving faster at a pace than what I needed. Cause indeed we the people, residing within evil, presiding in a fecal that we started. Beg your pardon, and that's partially apart from all the things that make us equal. I wonder if this herb will be the thing to make us peaceful. If not, you know I love ya. Whenever I might leave here with my brothers, discover that this world can never cover what you lost. No wonder we just smoke so much, cause everything it costs. But this feeling always helped us when it seemed like we
just
was off.
7 grams in the bag, and let that thing be free. I can get it for the low, for the tax. Just let the smoke free me. Ain't seen you in a long time. It's our smoke time. In a long time. It's our smoke time. 7 grams in the bag, and let that thing be free. I can get it for the low, for the tax. Just let the smoke free me. Ain't seen you in a long time. It's our smoke time. In a long time. It's our smoke time.
Check. Been about a year since I popped into your city. Ain't nothing really changed except the people you like, really. A bunch of silly. So nowadays you smoking fillies. And new puts at your jobs on your break, you feeling filthy. Some miscommunication running rampant, you can't pity. And lately you've been self-conscious about your little bitties. I mean, the tiggo bitties. You know I'm messing around every time. You might slime, you might rhyme when the line to the padding. They running radioactive. Assuming you imagine. Sometimes you feeling stagnant. It varies. But you know how these feelings, they temporary. You buy a Dutch. And then you cop whatever gets you married. Like I said, you ain't changed. Ordinary people, yeah, we just slaves to the vein. But I love it though, you always said come back. So now I'm coming home. We got a match, you know how much I hate smoking it long. We got a match, you know how much I hate
just
smoking it long.
Just put 7 grams in the bag, and let that thing be free. I can get it for the low, for the tax. Just let the smoke free me. Ain't seen you in a long time. It's a smoke time. In a long time. It's a smoke
just
time.
Just put 7 grams in the bag,
and let that thing be free. I can get it for the low, for the tax. Just let the smoke free me. Ain't seen you in a long time. It's a smoke time. In a long time.
Johnny Jones, Southside hip-hop artist. This, the album's called Dragonfly, the track Dutch Masters. He's going to be performing more music tonight on Extension 720 in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll also sit down and talk with the Johnny Jones about his young career and, of course, the side hustle. It's coming up, Extension 720. Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to go to McKinley Park, our latest stop on our Chicago neighborhood tour. Lindy's Chili, the 37th and Archer, right by McKinley Park. Dana Calderon, longtime friend of mine, stage manager in Chicago who has worked in anywhere. She really is the go-to stage manager and producer for live events. She will take us to Lindy's and we'll talk about what's happening in her neighborhood. Her family's been there for a long time. And coming up at 8 o'clock, Marc Maron joins us to talk about his new film and, of course, the new season of Glow on Netflix, which starts in August. Before we get to the 7:30 news with Don Kleppen, let's check in with my son, Miles Kaufman, who is here.
Hello.
So Miles has Miles is having a take your dad. This is a take your son to work day. If you listened this morning to WGN Radio, you heard me fill in for Steve Cochran's show, and Miles came with me, and then he stuck around for the night shift. How's it feel to do the both shifts?
It feels like I'm going to have a very painful morning tomorrow.
Why is that?
Because I'm going to be, like, tired, and I'm going to be like, ugh.
Well, this is a big weekend for you, so you need your rest because this your birthday is this weekend.
Yes, it is.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited. Yes.
What are you doing? What are we doing on Saturday?
On Saturday, we are having our party with
your friends,
my friends, and we're going to a karaoke place in Chinatown.
We're going to a karaoke place in Chinatown.
It's
That's
very
right.
Fun.
And we got a room, a private room.
Private.
Are you excited?
Exclusive.
Do you know what songs you're going to? I'm going to do. I've already decided I'm only going to do top 40 songs for your friends to embarrass you. So all of these songs that are on the radio right now, from Shawn Mendes to. Billie Eilish to, I don't know, to Post Malone. I'm going to get tattoos all over my face. I'm going to do the whole bit just to embarrass you.
Okay, well.
What are you going to do? Which songs are you going to do?
It's not the first time. I honestly don't know what to do because it normally when you're doing karaoke, it flows naturally. Now, I do know some of the friends, I'm not going to name them because that would be weird doing that on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my friends, they're like, oh, we need to plan this whole thing. And I'm like, no, it just flows naturally. Whatever song you're
into, more of an improv guy. Whatever you're feeling
exactly,
at the time.
Yeah.
If you're feeling like a hip-hop song, you'll go there. If you're feeling like an old classic rock song, you go there.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you don't have a go-to. You're not coming in with like one. A lot
I
of times, like in football. Okay, there you go. Like in football, what they do is they plan the first 10 plays and then see. So with you, do you plan the first couple karaoke songs?
Sometimes, but my go-to is Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, which Queen is my favorite band.
Really?
Ever.
So you're going to do Don't Stop Me Now?
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a little quick Don't Stop Me Now?
Starting from which part?
So you can go with the where it gets rocking, maybe? I don't know. The chorus? Okay. Whatever you want. We've got a minute till we go, so quick.
Okay, so we're going to start in 3, 2, 1... So don't stop me now.
Mm.
Don't stop me, cause I'm having a good time. I'm having a good time. I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. Ooh, I'm a racing car passing by like a diver. I'm gonna go. There's no stopping me. That's all I'm going to do.
Hey, that's great. Great performance.
See, I have memorized
that. So
you're
ready. And that's memorized. Oh, I'm gonna be honest with you.
My brain is amazing.
Okay. All right. You can go back in the room with Pete. Thank you for that. It's Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. People always say Chicago is less of a big city and more of a collection of little towns. Those towns, of course, neighborhoods. And we continue tonight with our tour, which takes us to McKinley Park. McKinley Park is on the southwest side. The neighborhood actually surrounds McKinley Park. It runs along Archer Avenue between Damon, Western, 35th Street. The neighborhood butts up against Brighton Park, Back of the Yards, Bridgeport, and Chinatown. The working-class neighborhood was settled by the Irish, but when the factories came to the hood after the Chicago fire, with it came the Polish and other Central European immigrants. Those days are long gone, but the neighborhood still is a working-class community with a much larger and vibrant Mexican community. Politically, McKinley Park is the 12th ward, represented by Alderman George Cardenas. Chuy Garcia was the Cook County Commissioner for this area before he moved to Congress. Garcia's Cook County office still stands on Archer Avenue. But like many Chicago neighborhoods, McKinley Park has one foot in the past and one in the future, as many in the area brace for the inevitable wave of gentrification and development. So who should we talk to? How about my friend Dana Calderon? Dana has lived in McKinley Park on and off all of her life. Her family's been there for almost 80 years. I've known Dana for 25 years. She's one of the best producers in the business. She produces and stage manages events for the Chicago Park District, for the city, Gospel Fest, World Music Fest. If it's got the word fest in it, chances are Dana's working it. She chose the place, Lindy's Chili, at 37th and Archer. It's been serving up chili since 1924. What a great place to talk about the past, present, and the future of McKinley Park. Dana, where are we?
We are in McKinley Park. McKinley Park, as I affectionately call the culturally void triangle of the city. But we're going to change that.
Why and, that?
There's just, what do you mean?
Because there's nothing here. There's nothing here.
No theater or anything like that?
Nope.
Nope.
No theater, no concert venue. No. Well, we got a park. McKinley Park is actually the neighborhood and a park.
Yeah.
And McKinley Park was actually the very first neighborhood park in the Chicago Park District, because they were all along the lakefront. And then somebody, I don't know who it was, said, well, let's put a park in the neighborhoods. And they said, ah, it'll never work. So they did. It used to be a racetrack over here. And there are old, old pictures that the Park District now has up on their archives of all the parks. And if you just, like, Google your own park, you'll find these cool photos. So what is now our lagoon used to be a beach.
Wow.
And people had rowboats in there, and they were swimming in there, and it was very cool. We don't have an alligator, but we have a lot of wonderful birds and nature and bees and things. We're expanding our nature area. We planted about 5,000
wow.
native plants a year ago, Earth Day.
It's such a big park, too.
It's huge. I mean, it's 6 acres.
Yeah, this is huge.
Yeah.
And it's one of the better neighborhood gems. I mean, obviously the first, but how much is it utilized? I mean, if you're living in McKinley Park, are you like, that's my jam. That's where I go.
Yeah, well, I hope so. You know, everyone in the city lives a 10-minute walk from a green space, open green space, which is great. So we're nestled in the center of Brighton Park, Pilsen, Bridgeport, and Back of the Yards.
Yeah, wow.
So all those folks are also coming into McKinley Park to use it as well. I hope. You know, it's what we want them to do. And when I first moved here with my husband, we loved to walk. So we would walk through the park all the time. Like, how come no one's out here? How come no one's out here? There's so much to do. And as things have progressed, I got myself involved with the Park Advisory Council. So I volunteer with them now for about 3.5 years.
Wow.
And we are there. We're volunteers, and we're there to bring in extra programming that's not provided by the Park District, which is like our farmer's
mm-hmm,
market.
Mm-hmm.
We bring in noontime concerts. We've got morning yoga. We've got lawn games, and that's all happening
it's
on a
all
Sunday
happening
morning.
Right here. Wow.
But
so,
we've got an ice rink, and we've got a basketball court, and we've got
yeah.
a soccer field, and we've got a lagoon.
A
we've got fishing.
Right.
We've got, yeah, we've got the beautiful nature area.
So what kind of neighborhood is this? I love it coming down this stretch of Archer. And you mentioned the neighborhoods that surround it.
Mm-hmm.
Who lives in McKinley Park?
Everybody. It's a very diverse group, and it's really exciting. And that's what I really appreciate about moving from the north side to the south side. I'm a born and raised Southsider. I was here in McKinley Park for the first 5 years of my life. But my family was here since the mid-40s, so every Sunday we'd come visit Grandma. She lived right over here on 34th and Wood. So I spent all my whole life here at McKinley Park, but it has grown to be more diverse. It's about 60-some-odd percent Hispanic. We've got a very large, increasing, growing population of the Asian community that's moving from Chinatown, which is exciting. We have African-American folks coming in. We have, of course, the Germans and the
mm-hmm,
Poles that were
mm-hmm,
here a long
right.
time ago. So it's a really great diverse area.
This is considered a working class community.
Very much,
you know,
so.
Obviously, there's a ton of industry that was here for
yes.
years. This was all along Archer, and you could see it from 55 and
yeah.
down. But this was a working class community that found work in those factories.
Absolutely. Well, on 39th Street or Pershing Road, whatever you want to call it, that was the Central Manufacturing District for many, many years. And back in the day, public radio WBEZ was also
right.
housed over there with the Chicago Public Schools
right.
at 1819 West Pershing.
Right. WBEZ.
Board of Education. And what's the Z for?
I don't know.
Nobody knew.
Throw an extra letter
nobody
in, right?
knew. But yeah, so those buildings were very, you know, they were kind of like, they brought in the workers and they provided some housing for them. And, you know, there was a big community. And then all that manufacturing jobs just left. So we're also not far from Back of the Yards.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that was there. And then Archer Avenue here was hugely populated with automotive places, and you still see a few of them.
Yeah, right.
But one of the biggest ones, C&J Auto, that was here for many years, they just left. And so that's all going to turn into housing.
Is that what
into,
it is?
Yeah.
And what effect does that have when you're a neighborhood that was known to be an industry neighborhood and to have a working class community that worked in those factories? When those factories go, when they're gone, what's the effect? What's the impact on the neighborhood?
Well, that's a great question. I wasn't here when all that happened, to be honest. So it didn't impact me directly. But what I see right now is that we do have a much higher unemployment rate right in McKinley Park than we do nationwide, and we got to fix that. So one of the things that we're working on with the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, we received a grant from them to develop a neighborhood plan. So we want to bring back more jobs. We want to see the 35th Street corridor back up and running. That used to be department stores and ice cream stores and tailors and all kinds of wonderful shops, bookstores. And now it's vacant, 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 something, a little something that lasts for maybe a year and then they're gone. Yeah. So we want to repopulate that. We want to bring back jobs. We want to bring back economy. We want to bring back schools. We want to keep our park vital and vibrant for the kids and for the seniors as well. And we want to keep affordable housing, which is so important.
Like many of the conversations I have about the Chicago neighborhoods, it always seems to, we get to the issue of affordability. And there'll be some that say just the new families that are moving in and the development that's moving in, you'll see the rents go higher and higher and higher. Is that happening in McKinley Park? Are you seeing this to be an affordability issue in here?
Yes. Yes. It has been on all kinds of real estate blogs and websites as like the hottest new neighborhood, and that's scary for a lot of us. I mean, it's great in some ways that our house, that our properties are increasing in value, which is great, but that also means our taxes go up, which means we need to have better jobs for everybody to keep them here. We want to make sure that the people who live here now are able to stay here. But what we're also looking at and talking about are transit-oriented developments, which is kind of happening all over the city, because we're right here by the Orange Line.
Yeah,
we're
right.
So fortunate with transportation. We've got two Orange Line stops in McKinley Park. We've got the Archer Avenue bus, Western Avenue, Ashland, Damon, 35th Street, and 39th. So we've got a lot of great transportation. So people can come in here without adding additional traffic, which is another concern. You know, when the houses go up, is there going to be more traffic? And how do we keep that safe and healthy, a healthy environment for everybody?
There's something great about when you go up and down Archer, and you even when you get off of 55 here and you come down, you see a different type of architecture, like an old school Chicago architecture, sort of A-frame houses. You see more of a Chicago feel. You get this feel over here. Do you see that continuing, or is that a product of the fact that this is a working class neighborhood and development wasn't coming in? Or as you know, more real estate bloggers and whatever talk about this being the hot new neighborhood, are you worried about that character?
I personally am. Yeah, because what I'm seeing going up are the townhomes, 2-3 floor townhomes. They're all connected, and it's becoming the new normal here. That's what all of them are, and they're very expensive. I'm really surprised at how expensive they are. You're talking about the A-frames on Archer Avenue, but you go inside the neighborhood up those streets, and you're going to see all the old brick bungalows.
Yeah.
And we don't have, a lot of them are not the head they have in the front. I live in a bungalow, but they're the like square. They're like little boxes of bungalows that I still have our stained glass windows that are in there. We still have the original flooring. We have the original electric. It's so funny because when we bought it, all the original electricity was still in there. We had to rewire everything. but yeah, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to live in one of those beautiful old homes that they all look the same up my block. They're all exactly the same.
What I love about it, and even looking at the wall as we sit here in Lindy's where, you know, we're in the bar area, and you look behind, and there's a black and white photo of the bar that we're sitting in, you know, from years ago. There seems to be a desire to cherish what was before and kind of keep it here. And that's something that Chicago wrestles with. You know this. We're wrestling this in every neighborhood for the last 20 years about if we want it to look like that or to honor the past, or we want it to move forward. And I think you guys are kind of at the precipice of having to make that decision.
We are, and that's a big part of this neighborhood plan that we're working on. And one of the things that we've been talking about is just that, is the look. I mean, what do we, when we see this development come up, what kind of look do we want for the neighborhood? How high do we want these buildings to go? How big do we want them to be? And when I say we, it's the community, you know, in general. I volunteer with the McKinley Park Development Council, and we started out because things were being changed in our neighborhood without the community being aware of it or being a part of it. So we wanted to give them a voice. Everybody is always invited to our public meetings. We hold them once a month, and we rotate them. We don't have a housing area. We don't have an office. So when we take our meetings, we're at a different location every month, and it's getting people into the different establishments that are here in McKinley Park and getting those business involved in what we're doing as well.
Politically, this is a Chicago ward. When you think of the neighborhoods you mentioned that are surrounding McKinley Park, but politically, what kind of neighborhood is it?
It's a very liberal neighborhood. Very, very much so. Very liberal neighborhood. I mean, we are so lucky to have all of our constituents right here on Archer Avenue, or just like two doors in. Our alderman is right here, McKinley Park. Our second district state rep is right here, McKinley Park. And our commissioner was until recently right here, McKinley Park. And that was Chuy Garcia, who is now in Washington. Mm-hmm. We need him more in Washington, so that's okay. And our new commissioner, Alma Anaya, she moved more towards a little village, I believe, or Brighton Park. But anyway, she left this office here. Still close.
But the political class here has served the neighborhood well. Or yes. Do you feel like we need new leadership, that kind of thing?
Well, change is always good, right? Change is always good. And I think it's whoever is leading the pack, they need to work with the community. And the community needs to know that that is a public servant, and you are welcome to go to that office, and you're welcome to sit down and talk with them and make your voice heard. And, you know, let them know what you want.
Yeah.
You know, don't think that things are just going to happen without your voice and say, oh, that's just going to go up no matter what I say. It's not true. So we've got a really strong community right here.
Other issues that communities face, crime. What's a crime situation, McKinley Park? You've got a lot of major thoroughfares here.
We do.
And of course, the expressway coming in as well. Does that impact crime here in the area?
McKinley Park, in and of itself, has been extraordinarily safe. I'm not going to say that we don't have problems with gangs and aspiring gangs, these junior gangs that just want to be, I don't know if I can say this, badass little kids, but they're just, you know, tagging. But if that's the worst of our crimes right now, we can handle this, and we're getting a jump on it, right? So we've got to give these kids something to do, and that's where the Park District comes in, and that's where our community gets more involved. You know, giving these kids something to do, giving the older teens jobs and a sense of self and a sense of self-respect. So we do have gangs that are bordering all of these neighborhoods around us. So we're in a spot where it can happen. It can explode any day now. But it's pretty darn crime-free. I'm real happy about that.
For you to have your family have such lineage here, mm-hmm. we go back to the 40s, for you to live in this neighborhood now, when you think about your life and where you're at, do you consider yourself a lifelong resident? Are you going to stay in McKinley Park for the rest of your life?
I don't see myself going anywhere because I hate to pack. I hate to pack more than anything. So I hope I'm here for the long run. I think about that a lot. I think about the changes that are happening, and I think about where am I going to be 10, 20 years from now? What do I want from this neighborhood? So that's kind of part of my voice when I talk to our politicians and this neighborhood plan, saying, what do I want to see for me selfishly in 20 years? I do want to stay here. I love our park. I love being able to, we walk everywhere. We walk to Brighton Park, to our restaurants out there. We walk to Pilsen a lot. I walk to Chinatown. I've walked to downtown. I did it once. I walked there and took the bus back. That was a long walk. But yeah, we walk a lot, and I want to make sure that it's walkable, it's bikeable, it's safe for everybody. And yeah, you know, when I'm an old lady, I want to be able to walk down the street safely and say, hey, I used to hang out here back in the day.
There's Dana. There she goes, walking by. Hey! Awesome to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
Thank you so much for talking about your neighborhood. And
Thank you for meeting me here. This is where my parents used to have their dates when they were much younger. Yes. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Lindy's Chili at 37th and Archer talking about McKinley Park. If you'd like to get to know the park, the McKinley Park Farmers Market Summer Concert Series this Sunday, 12 to 1:15. And this is the best part. It's a harmonica workshop. So you learn how to play the harmonica. Like I said, Dana's involved with everything. Thanks, Dana, for giving us a tour of McKinley Park. More to come on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Mark Maron. Mark Maron, the longtime host of WTF, Mark Maron, and of course, stand-up comedian, and the star of the show Glow which is coming back season three in August. One of my favorite shows on Netflix, and it's a show that we watch religiously. So it's awesome to be able to talk with Marc Maron coming up about his character Sam, and then also he's got this new movie out, a comedy called Sword of Trust, which is in theaters this week, or it was just out. It's a comedy that premiered at South by Southwest. And is now getting its run in theaters. So Marc Maron coming up on the program. A little bit later, we're going to talk with the owner of Bon Bon V, which is a T-shirt company. It's this woman, Shari Williams. She created T-shirts as kind of like a side hustle. And they're really for African-American women, black magic women, brown skin lady was one of these T-shirts, which based off the popular song. Anyway. They went crazy popular because celebrities started wearing them. They thought they were great. She got Instagram, and she quickly had to make a decision on how that was going to go from a side hustle to her full-time gig. So we'll talk with Shari about that and more coming up on Extension 720 Nights. Stay with us. Extension 720, like I said, Marc Maron coming up. Forgot Marc Maron was in Almost Famous as well. So close the gates, close the gates. He's like one of the venue managers where the band has they have a argument. That's been a claim to fame. We'll talk with Marc coming up here right after the 8 o'clock news. Programming note: I was in this morning for Cochran, back tonight, and the idea was I was going to do it again tomorrow morning. And I've been preparing myself, been hydrating, getting ready, not just for the excessive heat, but the excessive radio. And I just got word that Steve is back in tomorrow. He was going out of town, and I guess the terrible storms that happened today canceled his flights. So he's not going out of town, so he will be back hosting the show tomorrow morning. I was looking forward to it, of course, but I'm not gonna cry about it. I feel like I have a new lease on life. Miles and I might hit the town tonight. We might have an extra, we thought we had to go to bed, but now, oh my gosh. What do you think of that, Miles? Good? Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's, all right. I mean, I'm probably not going to hit the town. Where am I going?
All right. Well, it was rhetorical, but that's okay.
Didn't Chicago. Seem like it.
Yeah, well, all right. All right. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, in the new film, Sword of Trust, a pawn shop owner, played by Marc Maron, gets a hold of a Civil War relic that is a prover, an item that can prove that the South actually won the Civil War.
You are correct. This is a Union sword. This was given to my great-great-great-great-grandpappy,
mm-hmm.
who was a field marshal mm-hmm. in the Confederate Army.
Yeah.
And this was surrendered to him by General Sheridan.
It was surrendered to him by a Union general.
Mm-hmm.
What battle are we talking about here?
This battle? Oh, it's Chickamauga.
Chickamauga?
Chickamauga.
I don't think that battle.
Not familiar with it?
I don't think it happened.
Well, it happened.
Okay.
I assure you, 30,000 men lost their lives that day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You probably haven't heard of it because it's buried.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in history books.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you mean buried?
It is buried from the history books.
Yeah.
By Deep State.
Okay.
Because of
she's
deep
saying
state.
It's
Deep State.
Deep State. Yeah.
Shadow government.
Oh, that was the original name? Shadow government?
Okay. What you were looking at?
Yes.
Is a genuine relic. A very valuable piece of evidence
mm-hmm.
that supports the actual truth, which is the South won the war.
Okay. The South won the war?
That's right.
Show them the documentation.
Here.
Have you told anybody else this?
this is something you want to keep under your hat till you're ready to
seems like pretty big news.
The comedy follows Mel and his cohorts as they arrange to sell the item to Confederate sympathizers. I guess that's the best way to put it. For thousands of dollars. It's a film that unwittingly puts the pawn shop owner in the middle of the unseemly world of white power, all for a big payout. The film, written and directed by Lynn Shelton, has a great cast, including former Chicagoans like Dan Bacadal and Mike O'Brien, who co-wrote on the script. But the star, the man who makes the film work, is Mark Maron. The movie is just the latest in Maron's impressive acting career. The stand-up comedian can be seen in great TV like Glow on Netflix, season 3 coming out in August, and Joe Swanberg's Easy, and films like the upcoming Joker, which will be out this fall. And of course, Maron continues with WTF, maybe the most influential podcast in podcast history. Like I said, Sword of Trust is in theaters now. Mark Maron, my guest on Extension 720. Mark, thanks for being here.
Sure, man. Thanks for having me. Now, the way you described that movie, it didn't necessarily sound like a comedy. So I want to be clear. It sounded like a deep dive into some horrible stuff. And it's a relatively deep dive into some seemingly horrible stuff, but it's a comedy caper that kind of, you know, gets into the space and into the South and into the heads of, you know, conspiracy driven people. And even the way you described the conspiracy that the movie revolves around, right. It almost sounded like it was a real one.
Well, and there's something to be said about that. That's a very hard topic to make funny, but you guys do a good job of it.
Well, the thing is that it's a sad state of affairs when the idea that there are a group of people that, yeah, it's one thing to believe in the Confederacy. It's another thing to believe that the South won the war and that's somehow been hidden from history.
Right.
But because of the culture we live in, yeah, I'm sure that some people are like, yeah, that's probably a real one. That's probably a real conspiracy. That makes sense that those people would believe that.
When you think about that area, because it's funny, because we'll do like antique kind of roadshow type stuff on the show. We do a show called Swap Meet where people call up with their items, but they all stay away from that kind of stuff, whether it be Nazi relics from World War II or Confederate relics. For whatever reason, that's a hotbed of, because it's based in racism and all sorts of dark stuff. So it is interesting, as a pawn shop owner in this film, you kind of have the same thought, reservations about getting involved with this because of the people who want to buy this stuff.
I guess so, but do I? I mean, I think that initially my response was that this is ridiculous that people could want this and that people believe in this. But when I saw that you could get some money for it,
right.
Not that it was what was driving me, but I think there was a mixture of fascination with the mindset. Yeah, I certainly have judgment of those people in the film and the idea that there's money involved. Kind of was curious to me, and my life is sort of stagnated in the movie, and I'm sort of a relatively broken-hearted dude that's been through a lot, and I'm kind of resigned to my place in the world. But I think I was like looking for something to give my life a little purpose and to kind of push the envelope a little bit, get out there on the edge. There's judgment there, but it's weird because when I was growing up, Nazi paraphernalia mm-hmm. and all that stuff, there was a guy, I grew up in New Mexico in Albuquerque, there was a doctor, a Jewish doctor that used to have a booth at the flea market and he sold Nazi paraphernalia. So I guess of course it's loaded. It's always been loaded. And the fact that I don't know if it's great to necessarily live in a culture where, you know, the artifacts themselves have to be somehow subject to historical revisionism. Mm-hmm, I mean, they are what they are. They're fascinating. They're dark. They're horrible. But, you know, those knives were kind of cool.
Well, the great part about the film is that's the stories fall apart. The, you know, whatever the backstory of the paraphernalia, in this case, the sword.
As is true with most conspiracy theories, right. If the people bother to research them. You know, if things make too much sense, especially when there's parts of them that are completely ridiculous, just because you get emotional closure out of knowing the story, it has no bearing on the truth of the story. And just because you believe it doesn't make it any more true. But it seems that we live in a world where if enough people believe something, there's a momentum there that is usually used to dubious ends.
What drew you to the script? I mean, it's Lynn Shelton's. You've worked with her for a while now, but what drew you to doing this film and playing the character Mel?
Well, Lynn and I have worked together a lot, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for her work. You know, she's done about 8 films, and she did a couple episodes of my show, Maron, on IFC, and I met her when we did my podcast, and then coincidentally, she directed some Glow episodes. She does a lot of TV work as well. And she directed my last comedy special. We began to write a script together that we've sort of been working on and off for, you know, almost 3 years, and we weren't quite getting it done. And she just really wanted to make a movie with me. So I said, well, you know, you could just, writing for me is a very tedious process. And she was getting a little impatient.
Why is it a tedious process to write for you?
Because it's horrendous. I mean, you just sit there by yourself or with somebody else and try to pull something out of the air. I mean, writing, like, I write a thing every week for my listeners, and, you know, my comedy, most of my stand-up is developed on stage in real time. I kind of create improvisationally. I work through ideas in front of people until they kind of hone themselves into the pieces that I do on stage. Sometimes I improvise the roots of things that become comedy pieces in the opening monologues of my podcast. But Lynn has, like, always been a big believer in my talent, and we, over time, have grown to work well together. Yeah, I was resistant initially. I'm resistant to most direction, but I'm growing as a person, and I realize that my first reaction doesn't have to be like, nah, I don't think so. So, no, I'm not doing that. Why would I do that? It's just
it's really hard just knowing your work and everyone getting to know you as an actor, not just a comedian, but this role is you. And to the point where even some of the things, the pawn shop owner Mel, he likes guitars. He grew up in New Mexico. He's from New Mexico.
Right.
Has a background with drugs. It seems, how much are you able to bring your own personal storylines, parallels to the character as backstory?
The answer to the last question is really that, you know, Lynn, when I told her, you know, go write another movie for me, she did it. And she said, we're going to shoot it in 2 weeks. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure we are. But, you know, yeah, that way it was going to happen. I don't think anything's ever going to happen. I have a hard time knowing what I'm doing in an hour. So the idea that larger things are going to be happening in a month just overwhelmed me with anxiety. So somehow or another, my brain has sought to protect me and just does not deal with anything further ahead than, like, tonight. Which is problematic for people I make plans with, because even if I have to fly somewhere, the night before I'm like, oh, is that tomorrow? I should pack. But improvising and, my characters, well, I think that it's not a liability that the nature of what I do both on stage and on the podcast is fairly candid.
Yeah.
And part of the way I am out in the world is very personal, because there's not much mystique to me if you have gotten to know me through those other two modes of my expression. So I have to deal with that. You know, like, there's plenty of actors that if you really look at their work, they're kind to themselves most of the time.
Right.
But no one's saying, like, you're just being you, because they don't know them. Most people know me, so they can say that. But the truth is, I don't know in my real life, you know, outside of details that we took from my life in order to set the character in Alabama. But one of my shortcomings as an actor at this point was I was not even going to attempt an accent. So we had to figure out a way that I got there.
Right.
You know, so there is a lot to me there. There is some of my experience in the character, but I don't think that Marc Maron would resign himself to that type of life, to that type of kind of perpetual heartbreak, to that relationship for as long as he had been in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the movie, outside of the sort of fake reality it's set in, is emotionally grounded in that character. And so I think there's a difference there. You know, when you do a character, even if it's in my wheelhouse or it's something that, you know, I can handle as an actor at this point, that the emotional limitations of any one character, I think, will be different, you know, than mine. Even Sam on Glow, you know, people like to say, well, I'm just doing me. No, I mean, Sam Sylvia is not a neurotic person. He's not a self-reflecting person. You know, he's not a guy, at least in the first couple of seasons, that really takes responsibility for his actions. So that's different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I am doing characters that I can handle, that have my emotional spectrum, you know, can interact with.
Marc Maron is the star of Sword of Trust, which is out in theaters now. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Marc Maron, Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Marc Maron in studio as we talk about Sword of Trust, which is out in theaters now. You talked right before the break just about Sam on Glow and even this character, Mel. It's amazing to watch the evolution of your career as an actor, because I've known you as a stand-up comedian. I remember Jerusalem Syndrome. But that was a one-man show that you were doing in New York City. And to watch how you've turned your stand-up career, which, you know, you had the kind of angry rant style,
sure,
to it, which is cool. But into the evolution of these characters, how do you see it? How do you see how you've evolved as an actor over the last 10 years, decade plus?
Well, I mean, my stand-up early on was, yeah, I think that there was is definitely not so much a learning curve, but obviously my skill set as a stand-up is pretty dug in. I've been doing it probably almost 30 years, and that's really the core of who I am as somebody who creates things. That is my particular medium of expression. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as time went on and when I did the podcast, you know, which was an act of desperation that turned into sort of a new skill set, that, you know, as I became more comfortable with myself and as the work that I had put in, both in stand-up and a bit on radio, kind of took shape into this new medium that and in a format that I had complete control over, mm-hmm, and I do with my producer, Brendan McDonald, a certain element of a lot of, you know, whatever someone's insecure about or whatever their chip on their shoulder is or whatever bitterness they have or self-judgment or comparing yourself to others, you know, it took me a long time to get where I am. So once I started to actually get somewhere and people could realize the expanse of my voice, you know, a lot of those insecurities and anger sort of dissipated. I mean, there's a, you know, low self-esteem can be cured if you know, esteem comes. It doesn't, right, it's not a chronic condition. If your life changes in a way that, you know, you've worked hard to do something and it starts to pay off, you're like, I feel better about myself,
right,
because
right,
I wasn't wrong about my life, how I chose to spend it. So as time goes on, you know, the opportunity to act came, you know, when I started doing comedy, before alt comedy, before there were, you know, sort of, you know, small rooms that were off the grid, started kind of nurturing anybody and everybody who wanted to do comedy. We were sort of constrained to a, you know, a comedy club universe. But that's sort of how I came up. And at that time when he started, though I was doing stuff to, you know, be provocative and be angry at that time and have a specific voice, so I really didn't make, I had no choice in it. I was always been me. But the point was is that you were kind of working towards doing a show,
yeah,
built around you, which never happened for me. Fortunately, the opportunities I got early on in my comedy career never panned out. I don't think I would have said that if you asked me at that time, but, you know, I wasn't a whole sort of being in terms of how it's, I lived and acted on stage.
I think HBO put out your stand-up special
the half hour.
Years later. Like
95.
I remember 95, but I remember watching it after, you know, WTF and everything, and watching the difference between, I mean, you're still as hilarious, but it was much more political and much more angry. How does that stay with you, or is that something you kind of jettison as you find that voice?
Well, I don't know if it's jettison. Like, you know, I've made specific decisions over the years, but like what I was saying is that, you know, that opportunity to do my own show happened much later in a smaller outlet. I was not, you know, under pressure by networks. I had a certain amount of control when I did Marin on IFC, mm-hmm, and we were able, you know, I got that opportunity at a time where I could handle it. All the opportunities that I think a lot of my early career in my own early sense of expression was built on spite. You know, why does that guy get to do that? Why can't I? And in thankfully, the opportunities didn't manifest into anything other than, you know, pilots or pilot scripts.
Because it could have been a different trajectory for your career if you were getting that opportunity when you were feeling that way.
I don't think I could have handled it. I don't think I was ready, really. And someone else knew that, I guess. You know, I'm not going to, you know, say some sort of higher power. I will just put it in the hands of network executives. So what ultimately happened was, you know, I think I'm still intellectually similar, but, you know, I started to integrate life experience and I started to, you know, not have to come out of a place of fear or anger. And I decided early on, you know, not early on, but, you know, not long ago, given that there was such an explosion of stand-ups, that, you know, if I didn't run my comedy or my ideas through my direct experience, there was a chance that other, mm-hmm, people would be doing something similar, you know, because it's not so much hackneyed. It's just, you know, if there's 10,000 comics out there doing comedy and we're all drawing from roughly the same reality or platforms of mediated reality, you know, we're going to come up with similar ideas. So once I started to really move through my own heart and mind around my experience and first person it in a way that placed me at the center of it, you know, not just in ideas, but in experience, I think that it became a more grounded type of approach to politics, you know, drugs, sex, relationships, pop culture, whatever it is that I'm commenting on becomes uniquely mine if I put myself in the middle of it.
You also, when you talk about the word voice, and I think about your voice on WTF and maybe why you have had such tremendous success, obviously great content and being able to cut through the garbage, right?
Yeah, I guess.
But what I love about it is that you were able to be yourself and almost the anti-host in a way. You were able to, and you still are, continuing to be able to be, I'm just this guy, I'm interested, I've done the homework, but I'm interested in your life and who you are. And those early episodes, and I think about with other stand-ups that you came up with, that's what resonated, this idea that maybe you weren't putting on a character, that you were yourself, and that's what we became.
That was the reality of it. I'm not sure I got into comedy to entertain people. You know, I think that was sort of backloaded in. I think I had to, you know, I had something to say. I had ideas. I had confidence in them. I decided that stand up was the platform where you could, you know, sort of tell the truth in a way that you had complete control over. I mean, you did have to make people laugh, and I was hit or miss at that for a while, but I was pretty compelling. You know, there was a time where, you know, I really realized that, you know, I'm not everyone's idea of a night out. I mean, you know, so, but ultimately, you know, that worked in my favor because, you know, the audience that does dig me at this point, and I'm a little lighter hearted and a little more, I don't think I've ever been funnier, but, you know, I'm specific, and that's good. I'm not trying to entertain everybody.
Like right now, you don't think you've ever been funnier than right now?
No, never. Because I don't.
I agree with you. I think you're, every time you come on stage, the audiences perk up. They're very interested in what you have to say.
Yeah, and I think you know, a lot of, you know, over time, my natural timing sort of became better. My comfort level became better. My improvisation skills became better. My freedom of mind on stage. You know, when people talk about character or whatever, I always sort of knew that there were a lot of guys that somehow were able to just become a caricature of themselves on stage. But I think, you know, a liability, but also my strength ultimately was that I think throughout the entire journey of my creativity, I was really struggling to just, you know, land in myself. I think the journey was to complete, you know, and become a whole self. So that's where I ended up. And that's why, you know, the conversations are what they are. You know, I think for the first 100 episodes of WTF, it's just me inviting celebrities over to talk about my problems. And that, you know, sort of evolved into a style of conversation that became the thing, you know. But I'm very wary of people who talk about themselves as brand or being on brand. You know, I don't like the word content. Yeah, I still get nervous and don't really know what I'm going to say to almost every guest that comes into my house now. It was my garage before, but the garage that I have in the new house is being worked on. So they're actually in my house upstairs. And I don't think I ever had a character. Now, there is a difference between me on stage and me in a movie or me on a TV show or even me on the podcast. There's another 20 hours of my day that, you know, are not as compelling if you sit there the whole time.
Mark Maron, my guest, Sword of Trust, is in theaters this week. And you can, obviously, we'll talk about Glow coming up here. Season 3 starts coming up in August. Mark Maron, we'll take a quick break, get an update on tonight's news, come back and continue the conversation here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mark Maron in studio, the great podcaster, actor, comedian. Sword of Trust is in theaters now. Great film that just came out and had success. It was actually at South by Southwest and now put out in theaters. Glow coming up here, season 3 in August, which is, you play the great character Sam. Are we surprised at how successful this show was? I mean, this was at the time when Netflix was putting a lot of stuff out and a lot of stuff coming in, coming out. But Glow has become one of the hits of the network.
Given, you know, what I've gone through to get to where I am, I'm surprised at anything successful. So, you know, when I never think in terms of, I'm not a guy that's sort of like, this is going to kill. This is going to be great. So anytime that things get attention that I'm involved with, I'm like, really? Well, that's nice. That's good. You know? So I didn't really know. I knew that it was a unique show. I knew that they were sort of painstakingly kind of detailing that period without it being campy. Mm-hmm. I knew that Sam was a guy I understood, and I knew, all the women were, you know, defined in interesting characters. So, So I knew it was definitely had not been seen before.
Is that important to you as an actor to understand the character?
It's the only way I can do it. I mean, it's like if I read a part, or if I'm not really great at reading scripts. I have a hard time picturing things when they're written in scripts. But when I was given the script for the first Glow and the sides, the pages for Sam, you know, right when I read it, I'm like, you know, this is, you know, I can do this guy, and I'd like to do this guy. You know, this is a great kind of archetypal character. You know, like the weird thing about Sam being that he's the slightly, you know, kind of misogynist with a heart at the core of a, you know, a cast of 14 women, is how many women come up to me and like, I love Sam. My dad was Sam. My dad had friends who were Sam. Everyone knows a Sam.
The great thing about that character is he's the hero and the anti-hero in the same show.
Yeah, that's I like to think of myself like that in general. It's nice to wear two hats.
When you are deciding what project you're going to do, what's the most important thing? Are you looking to expand or to push and to think of the next character as risk-taking? Or are you looking for comfort? Are you looking for understanding the character? What are you looking for when you take on your next project?
I don't know. You know, I'm just pretty open. I'm not really looking to take on anything. You know, when I got done with Marin, I was sort of, you know, I ended that show on my own volition. I was like, you know, there's no reason to run this into the ground. It's not like we're making a fortune or they're giving us any more money to make the show better. You know, so what do we got to keep repeating it? So the last season of Marin was a weird journey into drug addiction. That was it. See you later.
See ya.
Had a good time. Four seasons. And after that, I was like, well, I kind of satisfied that. I did my own show on television. 9 people watched it. But, you know, I did it and it was good. So I wasn't really looking for Glow. And then it just came and I was like, all right. And I read it and I recorded it. You know, I had the guy who works for me sometimes, he recorded it on his phone. I had my trainer, who was an actress, you know, do the Alison Brie's part with me, and we sent the thing in and I got the part. So like, things come to me now, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, how much time it's going to take and whether or not, you know, they're trying to hang this small movie on me to sort of as part of the sales package, you know, because then you sort of like, it's going to take 3 months to shoot. It might not go anywhere. I might have to go to a film festival in Arkansas. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's like, I'm 55. I don't need to.
It's amazing to think about you as a younger comedian.
Not
you know.
That I have anything against Arkansas. I don't know much about it, but I probably wouldn't love it.
It's amazing to think about it as a younger comedian, you being the kind of comedian that's like, hey, where's my shot? I want my project. Where's it at? To where you're at now, where you're like, that might take too long. I don't know if I want to do it. That's part of the evolution of an actor as a stand-up comedian.
I guess it's just acting is like, I like acting and I always wanted to do it, but it's a tough job. And I'm glad that my life didn't depend on it, or that was the dream, because it's very hard. You know, I mean, I tried to do some acting when I was a younger comic, and it's like going on auditions is horrible. And I didn't have an agent forever. You know, so like anything that happens, you know, what I've seen in my career that has happened to my peers, you know, they go up, they go down, some get huge, and then, you know, something happens, or they just sort of fade away, or they arc out, or, you know, I'm sort of oddly fortunate in that, you know, somehow whatever talent I have, you know, relative to the bitterness that it was capable of, you know, from being disappointed, did not destroy me. You know, drugs didn't destroy me. Bitterness did not, you know, crumble my brain permanently. And somehow, you know, in the second half year, things have changed around. And I didn't expect any of it to happen. By the time, you know, I started the podcast, I sort of really had to let go of most of my dreams, because it was an act of desperation. Things had not worked out. I was, you know, about to go bankrupt in a second divorce. I really couldn't draw an audience. You know, people knew me. I wasn't unknown. But I just never had any real traction. And I had to really sort of say to myself, well, look, man, you know, you can still do comedy, but, you know, there was something about being a kind of like, you know, minor headliner doing B rooms for the rest of my life that really, you know, looked less exciting than dying. So, you know, there was some moment there where I was just sort of like, all right, well, this stuff isn't going to happen. What can we do with the skill set I have with no expectations?
Do you think there's a lot of comedians that everything you just described, I think a lot of comedians are going through right now, whether you're in your 30s or 40s and you're like, okay, where am I at? This is what I'm doing. Do you think a lot of comedians don't have that come to Jesus moment you're talking about, where you're like,
hey man, you know, when you're running your own life and you know, you get used to a certain thing and there's still this idea that things could happen for you, no matter how bad it gets. I mean, you're sort of at the whims of your own delusion. You know, I mean, it requires a certain amount of delusion to, you know, to even embark on a show and embark on a career in show business. And, yeah. and you know, and it's a hard life and it's not a meritocracy. And, you know, ultimately, how do you know when you're done? And then there's pride involved in terms of like deciding to exit, especially stand up. You know, guys, you know, great comics have been doing it for 30 years. You know, having to make those kind of decisions is pretty brutal, man.
Yeah.
You know, but it is the life we've chosen. And I think when you're a younger person, you're more idealistic and more ambitious, and you don't think you think it's going to work out. But the odds of it working out are narrow. And as you get older, you realize, you know, by the time I kind of hit the wall, there was no plan B in place. I don't know if there ever was, but, you know, when you get to a certain age and you have those moments where, you know, you've just bottomed out and then you have that moment where you're like, all right, who cares? I could always, wow, there's nothing in that, there's, what are you going to do? There's nothing there. So, you know, that's a dark moment. Yeah. But I think, you know, it wasn't a matter of faith in my talent or anything other than, you know, persistence and a need to continue to push out there that, you know, it worked out. And I do think that, you know, with the experience, I definitely paid my dues. No one's going to begrudge success, which is a great thing. I'm a rare case of like there's got to be maybe nobody out there going like, that guy doesn't deserve it. You know
how
what
important
I mean?
Is that to you, though? How important is the fact that you've had to go through the adversity you've had to go through in your life to your career today? How important is it?
In my own mind or in general? I mean, clearly it's very important or it wouldn't have happened. You know, I mean, the thing is that when you get an opportunity and, you know, you take that opportunity, if that first one, that first shot goes well, you know, after that, you better be able to do the job. So, you know, it really comes down to that. You know, you see a lot of people that don't have chops that get big opportunities and there's a lot of fanfare and somebody makes a few bucks off of them. But it turns out they don't really have any sort of craft or skill set in place that's going to enable them to keep working at that level. And then, you know, what is that? I hope the winning the lottery thing was good for you and that you have enough money to live out the rest of your life on that stroke of luck and attention getting, you know.
My final question is for you. You've succeeded in Hollywood at several different levels. Even the podcast world is now a world that Hollywood wants in.
Well, look,
you're the number one guy.
Well, truly, I'm a mid-level celebrity, and I'm not complaining. I love my audience. I like my fans, but I know where I'm at. You know, and it's a level that I can handle. You know, I'm at the level. Yeah, I'm not complaining, but I'm really at the level where, you know, if I'm walking down the street and there are three dudes walking towards me the other way. You know, one of them will be like, oh, my God, it's Marc Maron. The other two will be like, nah, I don't know that guy. So, like, you know, I'm happy the one guy likes me and knows me. But right. I've learned over time right. that I don't need to stand there while he tries to explain who I am to his friends. That's not a great few minutes. But I, you know, I have success, but it has been defined by me. And I have, a certain, if not total control over it, which is a gift. And, I'm fairly practical in terms of like, I'm happy to make a living. I'm not a big spender. I don't need a mansion. You know, I'm not competitive in that way. You know, I'm not greedy. You know, I'm just happy to be making a living, you know, doing what I worked my whole life to do.
The podcast is called WTF with Marc Maron. The film is called Sword of Trust, which is out in theaters now. And Glow, season 3 on Netflix, comes out in August. Marc Maron, thanks so much for coming in studio and talking about your career here on Extension 720.
Nice talking to you, man.
That's 720, rolling around till 10 o'clock, rolling around, I guess we are rolling around as well. Coming up, we continue our show loosely based on the idea of side hustle. Just heard from Marc Maron. We're going to hear from Shari Williams, who her company, Bon Bon V, is a t-shirt company, really about, I guess the way to say this is it empowers women of color. She started putting phrases on t-shirts, and she got very fortunate that some very high-level celebrities like Thandie Newton and Issa Rae from HBO's Insecure started wearing those t-shirts. Next thing you know, they're on Instagram. Next thing you know, this side hustle becomes a full-time gig for the Chicagoan. And she, which can talk with her and the company Printful, which helped her turn her business from a side hustle to a full-time gig. So that's coming up. And also more with a Johnny Jones. We heard a song in the first part of the show. We're going to sit down with him, hear some more live music. Johnny Jones, Southside hip-hop artist here in town. Also, my son Miles is here. Miles.
Hello.
Have you thought at all? Miles is with me today. It's a take your son to work day because camp's out. We were here this morning as we filled in with Steve Cochran's show. We're back tonight with Extension 720. Are you feeling it? You're starting to get very, not cranky, but you're like, a lot of that going.
I'm not.
There's a little bit of that going on during the last break.
When?
So this is a show about side hustles. Do you have a side hustle?
I have one that is in progress and one that is mostly an idea that could become a side hustle.
What's the side hustle? Well, I don't even know what your primary. Your primary is school kid. So what's the side hustle? What's the one that's in progress?
I can make a fishtail bracelet with whatever four colors of the consumer's choosing. I knot it off at the beginning. I make a fish braid or a fishtail braid all the way down to the person's wrist length, and then I tie it off.
And I get to choose the colors?
Yes.
I had one, but it unfurled.
It unraveled. First day that you got it.
No, not the first day.
The
second, third day.
Yeah.
But you're still wearing, you have some of those on your wrist, right?
I only have one that I made on spring break.
Oh.
I actually made my first one about like almost a year ago.
Yeah?
Almost.
Well, would you be able to, let's say that you had a cool fishtail bracelet and you were in a position where you made it and I don't know, Chris Pratt is like, I love him, and he puts it on Instagram like, my favorite Miles makes the greatest bracelets, you should get them. Would you be prepared for the orders that would flow in because Chris Pratt loved your bracelet?
I would need more people to help me.
Yeah, but they want it from you. They want the artistic.
Well, I would need like them to like make reservations, because if it takes like 15 to 30 minutes to make one bracelet.
Okay.
But if I'm doing like four people simultaneously that really want a bracelet, and imagine that they're like the Avengers cast really want a bracelet.
Right.
And that would take about 120 minutes.
So it becomes a math problem.
That's like 2 hours.
All right.
Did you take the production to China or anything like that, Miles?
Yeah, would you outsource? So you'd lose quality control.
Well, it would only be in America.
Yeah.
Oh, like, well, there Rainbow you go. Cone.
Like right, just like Rainbow Cone, favorite ice cream. All right, and then what's the idea for the other side hustle?
The other side hustle, the idea that hasn't really been...
That you haven't come through
that
yet.
Hasn't been solidified, is dog biscuits.
Oh.
So, like, imagine this dog just coming up, and he's like, oh, I'm hungry. I want some dog biscuits.
Okay.
Oh, I wonder if there's some free little kid giving out some dog biscuits. And that free little kid is me.
So the idea is that instead of a lemonade stand,
it's a dog.
This was you and your papa coming up with this idea that if you baked...
Not papa for all those radio viewers that know Papa as their father. Papa as my grandfather.
Okay, so your grandfather, you came up with this idea, and instead of a lemonade stand, you would go right in front of the house, right by the dog park, and you would sell these dog biscuits. That's not a bad idea. Why haven't you done it?
Because I haven't really put forward the commitment. And I'm not afraid to say that.
I'm very honest.
The dogs are like, I want my dog biscuit.
Yeah.
I'm coming over here every day. To get some dog biscuits.
There you go.
No dog biscuits.
That's there you got to work on your accent, your dog accent. Miles, great.
I'm a dog.
Miles, we hope you'll get to the side hustle, second side hustle. All right, coming up, we'll talk with someone who actually was able to succeed in their side hustle, and also hear some more live music from a Johnny Jones here on Extension 720. Stay
Goodbye.
With us.
Bye.
Thanks, Dan. It's Extension 720 on 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Johnny Jones is in our performance studio. His new album, Dragonfly, is out. The Southside hip-hop artist will talk about how he's trying to turn his side hustle into a career. A great new artist on Closed Session. We had him on the download a couple years ago. He just came in and talked. Now he's live in our performance studio performing. We'll have some more of that coming up a little bit later in the hour. But first, let's talk t-shirts. Graphic designer Shari Williams started her own side hustle printing t-shirts that empowered women of color. That business took off, and now what was once a side hustle has become her full-time work thanks to some well-placed t-shirts on some well-established celebrity Instagram feeds. Celebrities like Thandi Newton and Issa Rae have worn Shari's t-shirts. The company is called Bon Bon V, and once Bon Bon V got that celebrity heat, it became harder and harder for Shari to keep up. So she turned to the company Printful. You could argue there wouldn't be a Bon Bon V without the on-demand printing company that effectively outsources the printing and administrative tasks that would usually make this work hard to sustain. Shari Williams and Printful CEO Davis Six Nons are in studio with me now on Extension 720. Great to have you both.
Thank you.
So, Shari, where's this idea? Let's take us back to 2010. Where's this idea come from?
Yeah, so I was working a full-time job, and I'm kind of a creative at heart, and I was a web developer at the time, and I felt like I needed something as a creative outlet, something that was fun, so I just went all in, and I was like, t-shirts. I love t-shirts. You know, I thought there was a void in the market, so I figured I could fill it.
Was the intention always to make this your full-time work?
Not necessarily. I think when I started, I didn't know what it was going to be. I just decided to jump in head first and see what happened, and fortunately, it took off.
The idea of empowering women and women of color, that we're talking about what the t-shirts, Black Magic Woman, are wildly popular, Brown Skin Lady, based on the Black Star lyric. But it's amazing to see how the celebrity culture and people have really taken this on. When that started to happen, when you saw your t-shirt getting posted on different social media sites by actors and celebrities all over the world, how did you respond?
I mean, it's pretty cool. And luckily, I got into the business right before influencer culture became a thing. So there were a few celebrities where I'm like, can I send you a shirt? And they're like, sure. And they wore it and would send me pictures. So,
and so how did you keep up with the demand? Once that happened and you were like, oh, wow, people really want this stuff.
That's where Printful came in. I learned how to screen print myself. And then when that became something that I couldn't keep up with, I had a printer in Indiana and they would ship me the shirts and then I'd mail them out. And then I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore because I had another full-time job. So I signed up with Printful, and that kind of changed everything. Kind of runs on autopilot.
Well, let's bring in Davis. Davis, this idea of essentially outsourcing printing, where does that come from? How did you get involved in this business?
Well, we actually had our own store, just like Shari. We sold posters online and really liked the idea of not having inventory. So we wanted to sell the biggest category there is, and that's apparel. So we're actually back in 2012, we were looking for a company who would do it for us, but not in bulk, on demand. And we just couldn't find a company that met our quality and speed and automation criteria. So we thought there's a business opportunity to start our own business in this area. So we started Printful because our business, Starter Vitamins, needed it. And turns out there's tons and thousands of other sales out there who has the same need.
It's amazing to think about. Anyone who's printed t-shirts or been involved in custom apparel, yeah, you would have to buy in bulk. That game that the printers would say, if you wanted any sort of discount or be able to, at the end of the day, have any sort of profit margin, you had to buy hundreds and hundreds of shirts and hope to sell hundreds and hundreds more. When you talk about eliminating that bulk, that changes the industry entirely.
Yes. In the last 15 years, they developed this technology. It was not available before. It's digital printing, so it has obvious advantage over screen printing, non-stock, but also like you're not limited with colors, and you know, and through these machines are very expensive, much more expensive than screen printing equipment, hundreds of thousands of dollars a piece sometimes, and small players like Shari can get access to that equipment through, you know, companies like Printful who make that investment upfront. But I think the future is going to be on demand, and many industries it's already moving there. And it's better for environment. You don't have to keep stock that you're not going to sell.
Bon Bon V, when it started to blow up and become really your full-time deal, as an entrepreneur, were you looking at your printing costs? Were you looking at your shipping costs? Were you looking at all the costs that are associated to this kind of business?
Yeah, absolutely. Because like Dava said, it's really hard when you have all this inventory and some of it doesn't sell. And then you end up selling like I'm going to sell the shirt for $2 because I need to get rid of it. So it's nice not to have extra inventory. It's nice if you no longer want to sell a style, you can just take it off of your website and don't have to worry about it again. So it is simplified and streamlined my entire business.
And it has to be the way it works, because if you're trying new T-shirts or trying new slogans that you're going to put on T-shirts, and it doesn't hit, that one doesn't resonate with me, you can't be stuck with the 1,000 T-shirts sitting in the back room.
Right. Absolutely.
I always think about the way that small companies are always at a disadvantage, because you have the Amazons of the world that have redefined shipping and customer relations. They say there are ways to get this to you in 5 hours in some cases. How do you keep up with that? How do you keep up with the customer wanting more out of their customer service experience and their shipping experience in particular?
Well, you have to compete in areas where Amazon doesn't compete, and there's sort of specialty items, personalized items. People are willing to wait a little longer and to pay for something that's special. An example could be a mug, you know, a relatively low-cost product, but if it's your design and your name on it, people are just willing to wait longer and pay more. But there are more and more businesses like Printful, also on software and like Shopify, that bring the tools that were once available only for large retailers like Amazon to every small player out there on the market. So it's better. There's no better way to start a business now than ever before. That barrier of entry has been lowered a lot by software and tools out there for small businesses.
Do you see, as you look to the future of Printful, do you see a time in which all of the technology you're talking about and those costs, they'll come down, meaning that now more and more people, because of the expectations, they want things quicker and faster, but also customized, that these big machines and things that you rely on are going to become more accessible?
Yes, they are already coming now. So we've been in this business for 6 years, and the machines we're currently buying are already far superior and in cost lower per print than they were ever before. So then as we scale up, we give discounts to larger sellers on our platform, and the cost is coming down on digital printing, because digital printing is competing with the screen printing, and it's already more competitive, even for certain bulk items. So, like, there's companies out there who make this equipment. Their entire company goal is to outcompete the bulk industry.
When thinking about Bon Bon V, what are the challenges? I mean, when you started it, you're like, this is great, what a creative outlet. And even when you started in your relationship with Printful, but what have been the challenges of this company growing? Because it's been 9 years now.
Yeah, well, definitely in the beginning, it was having money for inventory, trying to figure out what parts of the business to invest in, and just trying to figure out what my next step would be. So I think having Printful has helped, because I can focus on marketing and customer service versus just, you know, being at the post office every day or, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Marketing is such a big part of this. And I think, as you mentioned, the influencer culture that we live in now, and it wasn't always the case when Bon Bon V first started. But a t-shirt company is almost a lifestyle company, and a lifestyle company that in its essence is just creating a look or a vibe. So how do you stay on top of those trends?
Yeah, I think it's just putting images out there that you know will resonate with your customers, putting messaging out there that you know they will connect with. I've actually been spending a lot of time on my next collection of shirts. It's been a little while, so I hope to have that uploaded this week. But, you know, just kind of looking at trends, looking at what's hot in pop culture, and just thinking about your customer.
How does a t-shirt make the cut? When you say you're about to upload new batches, what is it? What's the creative process for you?
For me, it's just a feeling, because like I am my customer in a lot of ways. Like, I started this business for me, like the shirts I didn't see out there in the world. So I think that makes it a little easier. But I do run it by friends and family and coworkers and such.
You have a very specific demographic that you're going after by talking about empowering women of color. Is there a way to expand the market? Are you looking for people outside of your demographic to be able to wearing the brown skin lady t-shirt and things?
I mean, well, absolutely. I think even though it started in one place, that doesn't mean it has to end there. And Bon Bon V in French, it's like good life, you know, is the loose translation. So just kind of everyone wants to live the good life, their own definition of the good life. So I think I'm able to expand on that.
Davies, my last question for you, as more and more competition enter the space, on-demand or outsourced printing, administrative, all the way down the line, you're going to get competition. People are going to come into that space. How do you differentiate yourself and keep yourself ahead of everybody?
Well, similar like small businesses, we're doing things that others wouldn't do. Like we help like now with international expansion. We have a facility in Europe. A lot of American companies wouldn't do that because it's a big leap. And we're adding products that are also very popular on the internet and are non-apparel products. We recently added jewelry, a customized engraved jewelry, and things like that. We integrate with more platforms and sell in more places. So you try to cover the whole field and do what the competition wouldn't do.
And my last question for you, Shari, this idea of this company could be anywhere. Obviously, being able to print T-shirts and the relationship you have with Printful, you could be on the coasts. What keeps you here in Chicago? Why is this a Chicago company?
Because I love Chicago. I'm from here. I've tried to live other places, but nothing compares to Chicago for me.
There it is. The download on Chicago Business today is Shari Williams, and the name of her business is Bon Bon V. Also in studio, Printful CEO Davies Sixnan. Can't thank you guys enough for being my guest today in the download on Chicago Business. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Programming note coming up at 10 o'clock, Kelly Kitley and Kathy Hart are in from 10 to 1. That'll be fun. Love both of those women. That's great to have them broadcasting together tonight, WGN Radio. To get ready for the excessive heat for tomorrow, the temperatures are climbing. But of course, the excessive heat, the extreme heat advisory from the weather people, National Weather Service. Is there any other service? Are there competing services? Are there other services like, don't listen to them, listen to us. We've got it bigger. It starts somewhere in the mid-morning, 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's supposed to roll through Saturday. So earlier in the week, I think it was yesterday, the day before, we were talking about it being today and tomorrow, but it has now shifted to tomorrow and Saturday, and the weather is supposed to break on Sunday. I, for one, was a little bit disappointed because they had the emergency, the OEMC meeting today with the mayor and the heads of state behind her, heads of, you know, which is usually a time when you're going to see them going a little bit more casual. It's my favorite part about any sort of extreme weather press conference. If it's in the winter, they wear their sweatshirts, college sweatshirts. In the summertime, they might go with a polo, maybe a t-shirt and some pleated khakis, something light. Today, they were just dressed in suits. This is like a normal day. It's like, no. I understand it's a new day at City Hall with the new mayor. It's a historic, but some things can't change. I still like the casual weather wear.
Yeah, it's like when there's a tornado, right. you go to Brant Miller, and he's got this tie untucked,
yep. sleeves rolled up,
glasses on, because right. He's working.
Right, I need to see that. From my heads of agencies. Yeah, yeah. I don't need to see them suited up like it's a regular 9-to-5.
No.
Right. I think they should be coming in with their whatever they would wear on it. So maybe we'll get one on Saturday. You know, maybe because that'll be an off day. And that's the fun part, to see what they might be wearing casually. What the Department of Environment, you know, if they've got their three-peat 90s Bulls t-shirt on. Some jean shorts. High socks. Some Converse All-Stars. Something like that. Be a nice, their Spuds McKenzie shirt they've got on, their half shirt, their Spuds McKenzie half shirt. I feel like everything is rooted in the 80s. You know, I was watching the news about the president's rally and forgetting that, you know, and even in recent time, his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, they show old footage of him in the 80s. And I just think of Trump as an 80s symbol. And then today you see that the Top Gun follow-up, part two, Top Gun Maverick, at the San Diego Comic-Con, it was put out, the trailer. Just feel like there's something about the 1980s that is drawing comfort to this country, and I don't know what it is.
Stranger Things,
and Miles told me there's another show that's coming out that's set in the 80s. What show was coming up in the 80s?
Hmm.
You told me it was Stranger Things. I remember today we were talking, and I said, why is it set in 1985? There was something you were saying that was coming up.
Was I talking about it on Moron Entertainment?
No, you're not. And Miles was a special guest on Moron Entertainment.
Really?
Dean Richards and Steve were out.
Yes,
so he was an honorary moron this morning.
Good job, Miles.
Yeah, that's a very nice title.
I hesitate to call you an honorary
80s,
moron.
80s.
Anyway, there was something we were talking about, maybe new movie. Something's coming out again. Top Gun, the other.
Oh, Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, next year, 2020. It'll
be Kristen Wiig. She's battling against the Soviet Union in the Cold War in 1984.
Yeah, see, there you go. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's something that everyone who's producing anything creative in Hollywood right now is like, I remember when I was a kid, it was the 80s, so let's just put it in the 80s. Everything's in the 80s. Let's move on from the 80s. Personally, I'd like to get more to the aughts. I think the aughts would be a good, some more period pieces, the 2004. Something like that. All right, we'll take a break. Johnny Jones is coming up. We heard a little bit of his music earlier in the program. We'll sit down with the Southside hip-hop artist and also hear more music in our performance studio here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Thanks, Don. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. Well, from time to time on our program, we like to highlight local music in our brand new performance studio. It's always great. Remember, Pete, when we were doing Studio 435 at the when we were on the download back on Michigan Avenue, Bob Ferguson would have to rip up the carpet, move things around in that street side studio that we had. I mean, it was a whole ordeal. Now we have a special great space for our artists to be able to do their magic, perform their magic, and that is happening tonight. A Johnny Jones, a Southside hip-hop artist who has been on the program before. He has a new album out called Dragonfly. We heard a little bit of his music earlier in the show. Let's hear another track before we sit down and talk. Here is the song Lucid from a Johnny Jones. Take it away.
Ooh, look, I've been reaching for energy. Look, who that hit the scene so stupid? Keep clear of the post that you get. In the love with these demons, you's been getting clear as we follow it blindly. Kamikaze, man, we waiting for timing. This is a shiny, here's Johnny. Man, on fire, think of Ricky Bobby, y'all do this. Feel like I'm caught in a movie, secluded. Was in the treaty, no Oscar, I'm lucid. Messing around, cover the earth with my mucus. I was just spitting this hit for my mutus. Not isn't anyone moving, I'm glad it's soulful. Holler at the moon a minute. Think that it's 5 in the morning, I'm rapping. Mama be calling, she saw about the balance. She wondering how I'm gonna manage. Probably be fine. Pen on the canvas, serenity. Man, what's the system that raised me? I'm damaged. There's no right, there's operations I'm planning. Then waking up to all types of this madness with my brothers. And I don't got space for no time limits, but I just be cool and feel like I see patterns. I'm lucid like
lucid tonight.
Look, seeing patterns confusing my eyes. Hey, wait, I've been feeling so lucid tonight. Never know what I'm gonna find. Just give me the lights and I'll I've been reaching for family. Took the time for the challenge, I can't be. I was broke with no hope on my mama house. Ain't no gimmicks, no time for a scrimmage. I stepped to the plate with my mind on the go. Think too much, feel like Clifford DeVoe. You line be too prominent, rappers no vote. Rappers delight, I get half of the pint and I kick it. Life is a movie, but this never scripted. Teens on saw my grandfather get lifted. Back to the board, never could finish. Stay on the run, on the Guinness, I pin it. We all been black enough, y'all do not rap enough. Bodies, I stack them up. Get past the hearse and them, I can't work for them, never. Just doing it's better. Hardly this time. They said that we new to this. Why they be acting so hooligan? They said that I'm rude again. You'll be stupid to move with this. I carry the torch in my country. Feel it whenever it's sunny. I swear that it's stunning. And I don't feel like running. I'm standing next to death. Maybe next time meet this cousin you losing. Come to this outside and try if you fusing. I was for ash and live off of Loomis. Getting a bastard. Niggas recruiting. I'm just gonna bash and show what I'm ruling. Feel like Wakanda. I'm just gonna tune in with my brothers. And I don't got space for no time limits. But I just be cool and feel like I see patterns. I'm lucid like. One, two. I've been feeling so lucid tonight. Hey, hey. Seeing patterns confusing my eyes. I've been feeling so lucid tonight. Never know what I'm gonna find, right? Just give me the lights and the drug, yeah.
Break it down like this.
Yeah! There you go, a Johnny Jones in the performance studio here at 720 WGN, Southside hip-hop artist. A new album out called Dragonfly. That song was called Lucid. Johnny Jones he's had a couple of projects now. We had him in on the download a couple of years back now. I think it's been about maybe a year at least since he came in and talked about his young aspiring career, which first focused on poetry and moved to music. He's looking to turn his side hustle music into his full-time job, of course. Johnny Jones, back in studio. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
to be able to put out an album called Dragonfly off of the Cocoons record. Talk about the theme, you know, the idea of what you were doing with the first and what you're doing with this one.
Yeah, so the idea is essentially metamorphosis, the growth from a little larvae to something beautiful and free.
Do you feel that? Do you feel that in your music? Do you feel like that you've crossed a bridge or gotten to a place where you've broken out of your shell or birthed from the cocoon?
I would say so, and that was the goal. I think that early on in my career, I was doing a lot of just, you know, technical rapping, and there was a lot of room for growth in my artistry. And so that was the goal, is to become an artist that isn't necessarily pigeonholed into the label conscious, but more so just an artist that makes music for Chicago, for anyone that can relate.
Last time we were here, I remember this, we talked about not only the University of Iowa and all that kind of stuff, and when you started to really become a musician, because you came up really as a poet. You saw yourself mm-hmm. as a poet. You really about all the words. When was the transition when you really realized that you were going to be less of a poet, more of a musician?
I think it was the moment that I did speech in high school. I was doing poetry and speech. And I think the moment I realized was around then, around my senior year. I went to state for poetry and I got obliterated. and I realized, okay, I can do this, but there is a ceiling for me. And rap had always been something that I loved to do. But seeing people like Cudi and J. Cole and Kendrick, people that are similar to me that have done what I like to do, inspired me to kind of break out. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I can pursue this. And poetry can be that groundwork to what's bigger.
Pursuing is such a great word, because for any artist in Chicago and any artist that's coming up anywhere, you got to balance your life. You got to make money and you got to make art at the same time. Mm-hmm. You're getting to the point now where that it's becoming one life. But up to that point, after school, I mean, I was reading in the article about how you would drive to Rogers Park, mm-hmm. you know, and go do a factory job there and then yeah. go do music. And how is your life balanced right now as you get more and more success and music becomes more and more of a full-time job?
Well, it definitely causes you to take a few more days off work. I'd say that. But, I mean, I'm still doing it. I'm still on the grind. Still got to pay the bills. But as it demands more of my attention, I think I'm blessed to have to work at a place where they're more flexible. They see that I have talent and they work with me. I think there is coming an issue where it's like you're needed elsewhere, but mm-hmm. you have your dreams that you want to pursue. And even if that dream makes you $100 compared to the other thing that you have a guaranteed money, I think the music kind of pays off more to see something that you've built organically.
Johnny Jones is in studio. He's a hip hop artist. And I say from the South Side of Chicago. And what I love about you is it's not one address. You've lived a lot of different places on the South Side of Chicago. You and your family have moved around. Do you see it that way, that you're repping the entire South Side? You literally could, just based on the addresses that you lived.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned them all. Like, I mentioned them all in just different places. I think growing up there, is especially being able to move around a lot, I didn't have a bunch of friends. I could be like, oh, yeah, my friend's on this block because I moved so much. But I feel like I was able to get a taste of each of all the makings that make the South Side and what it is. The candy lady going to the corner store, really experiencing what they say, you know, the South Side experience, what a lot of people don't come here for.
Right.
And I try to put that in my music so people can understand the perspective of it's not all bad. It can be nostalgic as well.
Well, how important is place? What your relationship to it? If you're bouncing from address to address, but in your music, you listen to your music, and you are very specific in rapping about Chicago, and that's great to be able to experience that or to rap about those experiences. But so how important is place to you?
It is very important because I feel like it helped me identify who I am as a black man. I think going to college, I wanted to get away because I had been in this place for so long in a bubble. Chicago really is a bubble. Like, you can be here forever. You can be on the South Side forever. There are people that don't go downtown. Going downtown to them is like going to Europe. That's the thing. So I wanted to escape that. When I escaped that, I was able to get some perspective to find out what place really is. And when I came back, I understood that it is wherever you make it, but it really is a testament to how you came up and where you grew up. And the South Side is exactly that for me.
And that same Reader article I was reading about you, they also in the interview, they talked about how your mom pointed out when you were doing poetry at a young age or starting out with rap that she wanted you to do more about the situations you were in, you know, rap about what you know, rap about the surroundings as opposed to just the sort of superficial whatever you're doing.
Exactly.
But so that's important to you, to rap about where you came from, what's happening, the issues, Chicago, all the things that are related to that.
Yeah, it's very important. It's really perspective, though. Like, if someone can put something in perspective for you, then I think it can open a lot of people's eyes, especially to what really happens in the city. Early on, like you said, like I was just rapping about nothing, a bunch of teenage stuff, cartoons and anime. But what really matters is what's around you, and I was around a lot. So there's a lot to say. I mean, we're all artists. We just have to paint the right picture.
Well, you're my favorite artist who can rap about what's happening in areas of Chicago, but in the South and West Side. Mm-hmm. But you also can get a Wally Zerbiak reference in, so that's always good too, right? So you get the ability to do both. But that's important. The pop culture references, I heard it in the music to perform today, and just overall, that's a big part. So I don't want to sell it that you're coming on with dark beats and all you're doing is talking about you know your childhood. But there is a lot that you're paying attention to be able to do this.
And honestly, it's interesting. I use those type of references to reference back to Chicago. So, you know, talking about Wolves and Wally Zerbiak, like, that's comparing. You know, it's funny. There's actually a place in Chicago called The Jungle. If anyone knows what Beverly is, mm-hmm. it's a very rich neighborhood in the Southwest. And a block over is a place called The Jungle, and it's very dangerous. And I was like, man, like, that'd be interesting to do, to compare, to do it. A theme or a metaphor about a place that's so close to such distraught, and a place that is just luxurious.
Yeah, yeah, right.
The Wolves.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Johnny, what's next for you? I mean, as the album drops and you get this opportunity to really get even on bigger stages, do you take that opportunity this summer? Is it going to be festivals and tours and putting more time into your music?
That's the goal. I think this year I did want to do the festivals. I'm hoping that it's not too late because, you know, they do that a year in advance most times.
Yeah.
I would love to hit a festival stage this year and go on a tour, open up for somebody. So if you like my music, please put me on a tour.
There you go.
Somebody. And yeah, the goal after this is to release as much content as possible so that I can really just continue to get the message out there. Like, I have so much more left to say.
Johnny Jones, the album is called Dragonfly. It's out this month on Closed Sessions. And Johnny, great to have you here. And thanks for being my guest on Extension 720.
Thank you kindly, man. Tommy, at the times, yeah, I'm so honest. Gotta hear the spitting plays, and it's right here bubonic. Hold up, this here just modest, but they downplay all the knowledge in the streets and the hearts and the ones that was killed and was lost. But the perks of the projects and the perks of the feet. Never mind, I was flying across sunny with mom over east. What a god is a beast. I'm gonna say he was C-23 when he died from the peace. So many words apart. If not, did he know that the world was eyes on God? I ran away, but I can't hide from God. I feel like Jonah. My seal just broke. I can't contain no more. I need to blow up. I show out when the show is on. I come, you never show up. I go for the extra mile. Southside brother with the extra smell. Tempers of dragon when the edge is hatching. And when it say flames to the starlight. You never show up. One, every cloud has a silver lining. Hey, if you fall now, how'd you get about it? Hey, feet to the ground, and you still ain't climbing. Hey, don't turn up now, where's your will without it? Hey, every cloud has a silver lining. Hey, if you fall now, how'd you get about it? Hey, feet to the ground, and you still ain't climbing. Hey, don't turn back now, where's your will without it? See, I ain't scared to die. And most would say I look crazy. But how can anyone just be anything if you feel what you can't see? Did I just fade to black? Cause any day they could take me. With my hands on the rail, when it down on the scales of a black and it changed, they paint me. I could have been anything. GD's on the block where I played. Just 12 when I saw how the game go. One day I saw Dodge Durango. Pull up in a black can spray, hit a kid in the chest, yeah, you know this story. And they all go insane, try to cope with the pain of the shots, not theirs like more. Everybody wanna go someplace. Everybody insane sometimes. Too many in the place of the feet, but the earth it was given to the meek and a piece of the road, let's travel. And nobody wanna go, I'ma step to the stand with a gap. I'll take what is mine to the giving is good on soul, so I don't need no chattel. Cause you slipped up, you a double agent, they pick big bucks. But this kind of place, man, got you sipped up. And anytime I place, but then again, never fall, cause the world too small for a dreamer. And anytime I control where the pieces fall. And any day I could leave here. So when they remember you, this what is yours, yours. Hey, if you fall now, how'd you get about it? Hey, feet to the ground, and you still inclining.
hey, don't turn back now. Where's your will without it? Hey, say every cloud has a silver lining. Hey, if you fall now, how'd you get about it? Hey, feet to the ground, can you still incline it? Hey, don't turn back now. Where's your will without it? Hey, say every cloud has a...
Yeah, there you go. A Johnny Jones in our studio, our performance studio. That song called Quicksilver, and the album's called Dragonfly. Southside hip-hop artist Johnny Jones joining us tonight on Extension 720. Coming up, Kathy Hart and Kelly Kitley here on 720 WGN. That's going to do it for Extension 720. Coming up, Kelly Kitley and Kathy Hart taking over 10 to 1. Miles, thanks for being here all day today. My son Miles, whose birthday is this weekend.
Yes, it is on July 22nd.
So Monday, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so are you excited about your birthday? How old are you
going to
be?
I'm going to be 12 years old, so it will be my 12 years of life milestone.
That's quite, it's just, okay, all right. What do you want for your birthday?
There are some main things that I really do want for my birthday.
Okay.
I would want Super Mario Maker 2 on the Nintendo Switch that came out on June 28th.
Okay.
The updated version of the Freddy Files that I don't know when that came out.
Okay.
The Star versus the Forces of Evil spell book.
Okay. Your mom's got all this, right?
Good. Good to go. And
she's got this list, right? The family's got this list.
And the Odd Ones Out autobiography, who is a YouTuber who I really like, and he does animation.
Hey, you're big into YouTube. I like that.
You
mentioned that on the
YouTube.
Moron Entertainment today as well, the
yes.
YouTube gamer.
I'm a YouTube moron. What can I say?
What can you say? Honorary.
I'm an honorary YouTube
moron. I applaud you because you said, you know, we had these 2 days off because camp starts on Monday back up again, so... You know, you said you wanted to come to work because you wanted to see what it was like to do the double shift, to do
I
the
did.
Morning where we were on Steve Cochran's show, and then the night shift here on Extension 720. So now that you've done it, how do you feel?
I feel very sugar, just sugar.
So there's been a lot of sugar.
I don't feel any emotions. I just feel sugar.
Okay. It has been a lot of chocolate, I have to say.
It's like 6 gallons of chocolate.
a lot of anything, any candy in the office has been consumed by this 11-year-old just about to turn 12. Well, thank you, Miles, for being the co-host tonight. I appreciate it, buddy.
Yes, thank you. I love being here, and I just say I love you, my great and lovely fans.
All right. All right, coming up, Kathy and Kelly here on 720 WGN.